Today's episode is brought to you by Rugby. Rugby, it's not for everyone. Okay, so I do want to talk a little bit about this new shit that's going down with Ryan Jones with his early onset dementia. Just a little bit. I don't know how upset I am about all of it, because I do have a tendency to get angry with anyone who wants to change rugby, since rugby has been changed so much that it's almost unrecognizable. And I don't want that to continue to happen. Also, I hate hypocrisy, so there's a good chance I might get really fired up. Then again, do you ever get so pissed off about something and upset that you get all this energy, like, oh, you're gonna get angry, and then all of a sudden you just go, oh, what's the fucking point? That's kind of how I feel about pretty much everything, including this podcast. So let's see if I can, I don't know, inject some kind of passion into it. How are you doing? Are you all right? It's going to be okay. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that a little bit, though, and then I will talk about England in Australia. Talk about the last test match, the winning third test that clinched the series. I'll do player grades and maybe wander off somewhere else. Maybe not. I'm not going to take too long because it's now 10:11 p.m., 11 minutes past 10. I have to drive to Albuquerque. Now, if you remember, I live in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, which is just 20 minutes away from Albuquerque. My girlfriend lives in Albuquerque. I have to drive all the way out there. And I don't want to get there at 1 in the morning. So we've got to make this quick. You didn't need to know all that. Shut up. I'm also exhausted. I've been working all day. So a lot of you want to know what I do for a living, and it's none of your business. But I will tell you this. It involves a lot of sweating and chafing, and my taint is as red as a fire engine. I think. I haven't looked at it. I don't think I could look at my taint if I wanted to. I'm not flexible enough, but I can definitely feel the heat coming off of it. Oh, fuck. Anyway, my taint is not the thing we're worried about. It's rugby players, professional rugby players specifically, rugby players' brains. All the woke rugby accounts are outraged once again by the existence of head trauma in rugby, and they are demanding something. I love that, by the way. All these fucking woke, annoying rugby accounts that actually hate rugby, they're always demanding that something be done. Right? This, it's enough already. We need something to be done. And I have yet, I mean, maybe it's because I don't like to click and actually read anything, but what do they actually want rugby to do about it? What do they want world rugby to do about it? Is it world rugby? What do they want them to do? Like, it's like they have already done stuff. That's the thing. Like, they've already, as I said, they've damn near ruined the game with law changes specifically designed to make the game safer for the players. Is it safer now? This is my other thing. You've got Ryan Jones. This is the big new news. Ryan Jones has been diagnosed with early onset dementia, but he was playing the game before all these law changes to combat this sort of thing. Same as all those cunts, and I don't know why I call them cunts, I shouldn't really, but you know, all the people like Steve Thompson, who I really like, England legend, but all of these people suing, are they suing World Rugby? Are they suing the RFU? I can't remember, but all of these players were playing before they started making all these changes to the laws to try and protect players. So I'm not sure what these woke Twitter accounts and fans are expecting, or like, how long does it take? Maybe some of you will know, and you can let me know on Twitter, at Ranter Rugby or at Eddie Stevens with an extra S at the end. How long until we actually have a considerable amount of data to show whether or not the law changes have made a difference? I suppose even after a season, we could look at concussions within games. Do we have fewer concussions? I don't know. I haven't done the research. I won't do research before podcasting. I just won't. But my point is, something, you know, when they're fucking screaming something must be done. Something has been done. Lots of things have been done. They've lowered the tackle height. They've aggressively outlawed any kind of head contact, you know, even accidental. So, like, short of completely changing the sport to something that is no longer even rugby, like, what do they expect to be done? That's what I want to know. I've heard there's one argument I have heard is that they need to they need fewer substitutions, fewer subs on the bench, maybe just find a way of restricting substitutions so that players have to be on the pitch for longer, and the thought is that that would mean that they have to have bigger engines, be more mobile, or be able to last longer, and therefore you would bring down the average weight of players. But would that have a significant effect on concussions? Because there's a lot of players who get concussed who aren't huge. It's not always like just a fucking giant juggernaut of a prop running into a scrum half. I mean, the impact, I suppose, you know, you're going to have bigger impacts when players are bigger, but I wouldn't be, I would imagine even if you had, even if you went back to a, what would it have been? Like a 7-man, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 20, yeah, 7-man bench. I mean, I don't know what else they would want to do, but even if you found a way to get all these players to play for, you know, play more minutes per match, and you manage to bring down the weight, the average weight of each player by like 2 stone, 3 stone. Is that insane? I have no idea what you would be looking for, what kind of a drop in weight you could expect realistically. But even if they did that, would it really have a massive effect on concussions? Because now I'm thinking, what about rugby league? Because rugby league, those impacts are insane. And rugby league players are not as big as union players for that very reason. They have to run a lot more. But it's interesting because we don't know, because rugby league, because it's all a bunch of hard northerners and stupid Australians, they don't give a fuck. Do they even have stats on concussions? Are they? Actually, this is really interesting because when you look at rugby league, those impacts are fucking insane. I'll go so far as to say that the impacts in rugby league are at least, they appear to be bigger. They appear to be more, I always want to say pyrotechnic, and I don't know if that's a stupid thing to say, but they're more explosive. You see bodies flying more, and they're more lightweight on average. Now I'd like to know, does that mean that they do have fewer concussions? Again, something I could research, but I won't. You do the research and you let me know. But honestly, when I think a lot of the complaints from not just rugby Twitter accounts, you know, just people in general, is it's so easy just to wave your finger and go, this is terrible, how do they allow this? But it's like you've got to actually come up with a solution. You can't just complain about it. And a lot of these people, I think, I've said it before and I'll say it again, and I'm not the only one to say it, a lot of these people don't like rugby. They kind of hate it. They don't want rugby to exist. I don't know what they expect can be done, but at some point, it feels like they want to change the game until it is no longer really resembling what it is that like real rugby fans love. Because, and really quickly, like, what they really want is they want rugby banned. A lot of people want rugby banned, right? And by the way, maybe it should be banned. I've said that before. It may be that rugby is a stupid sport and it's not worth the risks. But in my experience, everything, absolutely everything worth doing has some sort of risk attached. It has to. Nothing worth doing is easy and without risk. You have to have risk. People play rugby and watch rugby precisely because of the risks. It's physical, it's dangerous, it is, for want of a better word, fucking manly. Okay, in life you cannot be rewarded without some risk, and in rugby the risk is the reward. So maybe that's excuse me, that's how I feel about it. But a lot of people, that's not a good enough reason for rugby to exist. And a lot of people nowadays, they want to live in a world where you never get sick, nobody dies, nobody gets hurt, no matter how miserable you fucking make everyone. They want to shut it down, shut everything down. Everybody stay at home, play video games, have virtual drinking sessions, and just turn into fat, useless cunts. Now, I've probably gone way too far. I think most of the rugby fans, if you can call them that, that get upset about this, really, they're just, it's all a bunch of finger waving, isn't it? It's all a bunch of, I care about this, aren't I a great person? And then a lot of it is probably people that genuinely do want something to be done. But again, what's the solution? What have they come up with any? What can we do that hasn't already been done? It's kind of like, you would never even, I've said this before, and again, I'm not the only person to use this analogy, but you know, if you you would never do this with boxing. You would never say boxing is too dangerous, we need to lower the risks, because it's punching people in the head and you're never going to get anyone to change that. So you don't even bother. It would be nice if we had that attitude with rugby, I think. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the end result of this will be an actual calculable? I think it's calculable. Or maybe it's none of those words. Anyway, without an actual way, maybe there will be a way of actually proving that certain law changes that come about as a result of this do have a significant impact on long-term health problems related to impact, head trauma. And maybe they can do that without ruining the game. Maybe. My issue is, it's a serious issue and we should care and we should do something about it. But I could really do without all the fucking gesticulating and all the, like I said, the finger wagging and the anger. It's like, what are these people fucking angry about? It's rugby, you fucking morons. Like, if you're angry, if you're angry with world rugby and you're angry with the RFU, or, you know, whatever rugby union your national team is called. If you're angry with people about it, get a fucking grip. It's a professional sport. All they want to do is, I mean, all world rugby wants to do is create a marketable, what's the word I'm looking for? You know what I'm trying to say. Fuck me. This is so unfair that my brain... You know what it is? I've had too many hits. Someone should have done something about this. I've had a lot of head trauma. Not just playing rugby. Just in life. Someone should do something. I'm angry. And I can't remember why. That's the worst part. Anyway, I think that's enough about that. All I'm saying is... I guess what I want to say is players like Ryan Jones, it's sad that that happened. I'm also really upset about players like Doddy Weir and Joost van der Vesthuizen, and there's that rugby league player that got motor neuron disease, and there's a pretty significant amount of evidence linking that disease to contact sports, I believe. Or did I make that up? Who knows? But these things are really upsetting, and we don't want it to happen. But again, it's life. You know, I made this point on a Twitter group chat. We all drive around in cars, right? So it's inherently dangerous. So what do? We make laws to make it as safe as possible. They have speed limits. They have seat belts. You're not allowed to be drunk and drive. All these things and all these systems that are in place, traffic lights, stop signs, etc., to try and make this inherently dangerous activity as safe as possible. It will never be safe. Driving, as long as everyone has a car, which we fucking shouldn't, it's stupid, but we do, and we need them for now, as long as we're all allowed to drive around, we will, and people will die as a result. That's just life, you know? And also, you know, don't we have an overpopulation problem? Now, that sounds really insensitive. I don't want any rugby players to die, that's for sure. And I don't want players like Ryan Jones to have fucking early onset dementia. It's awful, but I think that's just rugby, isn't it? Isn't that just rugby? You know, be as careful as you can. If you're getting knocked out too often, you definitely want to quit. Whatever. That's enough on that. Let's talk about the England tour to Australia, can we? So as a whole, the three test tour was a mixed bag, okay? There were pros and cons to it. Let's discuss the pros. And I may not even bother getting into the cons because I don't know that I care that much about them. Let me say, first off, we won. We won a three test series in Australia. That's fucking great. That is great. Okay. Secondly, this is the first time in a long time, maybe ever, that I haven't been utterly outraged by Eddie Jones's selections. Like, when I look through the selection, the squad that he took to Australia, I'm not fucking furious about it. I'm not even confused. Well, one except I am confused by the inclusion of, is it Will Joseph? I can't remember his first name. I think it's Will Joseph, Jonathan Joseph's brother. That one didn't make sense to me. It would have made sense if he'd never got near the starting squad and he'd been there for the experience in the same way that Marcus Smith was brought in when he was really young. That would have made sense to me. But the fact that he was put on the bench ahead of Joe Marchant, excuse me, I'm choking, ahead of Marchant is insane to me. But that's it. That's the only, usually there's fucking half the squad makes no sense to me. This time, just that one situation. And I don't know enough about Will Joseph, so maybe he's a great player and deserved to be there. Maybe he was tearing up trees, as they say, in training. I don't know. But it just didn't make sense to me, especially when Joe Marchant fills me with confidence. He's one of those, you know, in a problem position for us. The centres are a nightmare for England. I worry constantly who should be playing, you know, who should be playing 12 and who should be playing 13. Marchant is the one player that where if they pick him, I'm like, okay, no problems there. You know he's going to defend well. You know he's a threat in attack. He's not going to completely fuck up. I like that. But let's move on. And this was supposed to be the pros. Okay, so what I was saying is I wasn't utterly outraged by Eddie Jones's selections for the first time ever, probably. And a number of England players really impressed me. A lot of them are players that I've always loved. Some of them are players that I wasn't sure should be there. So just off the top of my head, running through the team really quickly, Ellis Genge. How great is Ellis Genge? I fucking love Ellis Genge. He's a nightmare. He's hard as fuck. And those, I mean, you've seen the clips of him. You saw it live. You've seen the YouTube videos where he runs over Michael Hooper, and then he ran over, who was it? A Polynesian guy. I can't remember his fucking name, but not somebody who usually gets run over. Ellis Genge in that third test was just a beast. And I love him in general. And long-term Sheddy and Twitter group chat member Chris Jones, shout out to Jonesy, said there should be more players from council estates playing the game. And I wonder about that. I wonder how well that kind of rough background and upbringing will translate to rugby. Because, I mean, Ellis Genge is unique. But it's not just because he grew up in a shithole and got in lots of fights. He's a physical specimen. I mean, he's on another level when it comes to power. But it would be interesting to see, because I know rugby is not the, you know, the public school boys game that it used to be, but it's still not played much by inner city kids. Could you ever get them playing it? The great news is you wouldn't have to worry about traumatizing their brains because they've already fucked them all up with glue, sniffing glue. That wasn't even I don't even know if that even makes sense. Do inner city kids sniff glue? Does anyone sniff glue? Because I'll tell you, I've done a lot of drugs in my life. I have done mushrooms, acid, cocaine, marijuana, speed. I guess that's it. Steroids. Never done glue, never sniffed glue, never wanted to, never will. Aren't I great? Anyway, moving on. Ellis Genge, he was awesome. Courtney Laws as captain was brilliant. Billy Vunipola played better than he has in years. Owen Farrell really impressed me because, you know what, it wasn't long ago that I was saying I didn't think Owen Farrell should be in the team anymore. And I think he made himself pretty much undroppable in this three test series. Now, I'm prepared to have a conversation about whether or not he should be playing 12, because maybe, you know, Marcus Smith, again, this is supposed to be the pros, but Marcus Smith wasn't as impressive as I'd hoped he'd be. He had some moments, loved his intercept try. That made me almost come in my pants, not in a sexual way. I'm speaking metaphorically. Gave me a raging hard on, turned me gay metaphorically. But other than that, he seemed hesitant at times, and he didn't have the swagger or the confidence that he always has for Quinns. Mind you, neither did Danny Kerr, so that's interesting. But Owen Farrell was fucking just nails, like in every possible way. And he was carrying well. I don't think he got enough credit for his carrying in the third test. Maybe the second too, actually. Yeah, I think the second test he was carrying really well. Anyway, thought Owen Farrell was fantastic. Jack Knoll, he wasn't at his absolute best, but he was good. There were times he got the ball and he was beating defenders and beating tackles in a way that no other back three player seems able to do as well as him. And the player I was most impressed with, only in that I wasn't sure he should even be in the team, was Tommy Freeman. I thought he looked to the manner born and well worth his place in the team now. Now, I'm still pissed off that Adam Radwan hasn't been given more of a chance, and I'd love to see Louis Leiner in there. Maybe Caden Murley. And by the way, I don't like talking about Caden Murley because I was a big fan of his before anyone else got excited about it. So I don't know why that makes me not want to talk about it. I think I've said this to you before. I'm one of those people, like, if I like a band and no one's heard of them, I don't want them to become successful, because as soon as everyone else starts talking about them, I feel like it's my band and I need everyone to know. I'm like, fuck you, you can't like them. I liked them before they were big. It's really juvenile and stupid. That's how I feel with Caden Murley. And then Freddie Stewart was fucking incredible. So there was a lot of good performances. And all in all, looking at that third test, so the first match, very much, you know, in retrospect, at the time, I was not so optimistic about it. I was pretty worried about England, but in retrospect, it's pretty obvious that first test was just the team learning to play together. Marcus Smith and Owen Farrell at 10 and 12, had they played together before? They must have. I was about to say something that's not true. Anyway, a lot of those players hadn't played together. So they made big improvements for the second test, and I think they made more improvements for the third test. And no, we never played like total rugby, all right? There were some rough patches. It was really close, and we were probably, I think, in every game, especially the third match, we were probably saved by Australia making a lot of mistakes. But again, I'll take any kind of win in Australia. Anyone who thinks we should have comfortably won that series and that that's a weak Australia team is underestimating just how hard they are to beat at home, especially when you're England. Australia do not want to lose to England. No one wants to lose to England. But that's a fucking hard place to go and play and win. And that was they hadn't played in a while. I think they lost their last two or maybe even three matches, but they'd had some big wins last season. They're not a shit team. And I mean, it's tricky because I feel like I'm sick of saying this is that Eddie Jones is developing a team, because I feel like it should already be developed, but that is what was going on. And there were a number of players unavailable. So yeah, all in all, I'm happy with that. Very happy with it. Not just a little bit. I'm very happy with how that went. Speaking of Eddie Jones, I'm not sure if I was, but I just remembered. If you haven't seen it, you have to look at the video of Eddie Jones being called a traitor by an Australian fan. It's funny because everybody's like making fun of the guy that was calling him out as a traitor, because Eddie Jones fucking offers him out and says, come and say it to my face. And he kind of backs down. I would like to point out, I don't think the fan was backing down because he was scared of fighting Eddie Jones. I think he was probably, it was a combination of the, the security guy yelling at him that he'd already been warned. So he doesn't want to get fucking banned from the stadium. And what are you going to do? If that was you, if Eddie Jones said, come here and fucking say that to my fucking face, come and say it to my face, what would you do? Would you jump on the pitch and get in his face? You'd be instantly, I mean, forget about, I'm sure security would, someone would tackle you because they love doing that when someone runs on the pitch. But what are you going to do, beat up Eddie Jones? You're going to go to jail? You're going to be, Eddie Jones is like 60, like, and he's tiny. There's no way that you win in that situation. So you have to do what he did and go, all right, and make a weird, I thought it was kind of funny. And the other thing is Eddie Jones a traitor? I mean, you could argue that he is. I get it. I get what that guy was saying. Because I've said this before. Now, I'm old school, but, and it's very easy for me to say, sitting here in my throne, wearing a thong as I am, miles away from any of this shit, without the opportunity to make the kind of money these people are making. But it's always rubbed me the wrong way when players pick other nations to play for, because they can't get picked by their home nation. And even coaches, it kind of bugs me. Like, if I was an Australian, and when Eddie Jones came over and got the whitewash, won that three-test tour, I'd be pissed off with him. But you know what it is? I get it. I get it. It's just, it's a professional game. It's a job. Really, I think he's not a traitor. He's a mercenary. That's what we have. We have a bunch of mercenaries. And it's sad. I don't like it, but that's just the way it is. Hang on a second. I have to drink something. I'm dying. Oh, God. Sorry about that. That was, I'm drinking, if you're listening in England, I doubt you have this. This is zero sugar, Dr. Pepper, and cream soda. That's what it's called. It's like they mix Dr. Pepper with cream soda, and it's fucking great. And it's zero sugar, so it won't make me fat. Or actually, it might. Actually, there's some evidence that artificial sweeteners will make you fatter. But it won't have the, I hate sugar. It has all sorts of inflammatory effects and it causes all sorts of problems with skin and stuff. I won't bother getting into it, but this zero sugar Dr. Pepper and cream soda won't do that, although it will give me cancer probably. Anyway, and maybe early onset dementia. Where was I? Let me assess that third test since I did make notes. I've got some notes here. Let's see if there's anything worth talking about. I'll just read through my notes. I'll read them to you if they're worth hearing, and then I'll do my player grades for that third test. So I just noticed the first thing I wrote down was that after the first 10 minutes, England have offered nothing, and Australian mistakes have kept us in it, and it was 0-0. So there you go. I was kind of pissed off after the first 10 minutes. Then a couple minutes later, Johnny Hill looking busy, which he did. I thought Johnny Hill played really well too. He was an absolute bastard, and God, Australians must hate him, but good for him. And well done him for getting a player sent off in that. Was it the first test? Let's see. I'm complaining about Michael. In 12 minutes and 45 seconds, Michael Hooper bound in a ruck. And then as Kerr goes to pass, he grabs Kerr's arm, forcing a knock on. What the fuck? I remember that. How many times does a player who's bound into a ruck grab the scrum half and the referee penalizes him and says he's interfering with the scrum half? And here, they just let it go. I don't know what happened there. Marcus Smith, he smashed two players in this match. He smashed, who was the first guy he hit? I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, the Polynesian winger's name. Kurim, I don't remember. He smashed somebody else later. Who was it? Fuck. Might have been Michael Hooper, actually. I'm not sure. But two big hits from Smith. I don't know where they came from. Although Marcus Smith is a decent defender. Just every now and again, he's a little bit too small. I made a note here. We're going to have to get used to commentators saying 6'5" every time Freddie Stewart plays. I've noticed that. They mention his height, understandably, every single time he plays. But you know he's 6'5" because they say every time he's 6'5". Another thing with the commentators that made me laugh. This is tell me what you think of this on Twitter if you agree. Or actually, don't tell me if you agree. Tell me if you disagree. Don't tell me anything. Just shut up. But people, and it's usually pundits, constantly, in my opinion, overthink what's going through players' heads during matches. Because at one point, the commentators, and I've heard this, they do this all the time. They say it with all sorts of players, but they said Michael Hooper was able to focus on breakdowns and just doing his own thing because the other two members of the back row were able to do all the carrying for him. Now, I find it really hard to believe that Michael Hooper is thinking in his head, like, well, I've got two big men in my back row, so I can focus on turnovers. It's it. I can play totally different. Like, no fucking way. Like, I'm pretty sure if you asked him, because I've seen this before, when they talk to players in this situation, they'll always tell you they didn't change the way they play. They don't do anything different. They play the way they play. They play the best they can play all the time. It just seems absurd to me to think that he's even going to be thinking that. He's remember, you don't have to carry as much. No, he's going to have two big men doing a lot of the carrying, which is going to help. But other than that, he's not even going to think about it. Anyway, I don't know. Then Danny Care came off at 36 minutes. Now, this was interesting because I made a note of it, and I did think I was a little bit surprised that he came off. He wasn't playing great. I don't think he was playing terrible, but he wasn't playing great. But the thing is, everybody's acting like he was... as Eddie Jones is wont to do, Eddie Jones hauled him off early. Even Luther Burrell on Twitter tweeted, I know that feeling. But Luther Burrell was hauled off after, I think, 5 minutes. It was something insane like that. It was, like, very, very early. Danny Care was hauled off basically at halftime. But that's what made it weird, is that it was only 4 minutes until halftime. So it seemed like a strange time to take him off. But there you go. I'll tell you what, though. I hope that's not the last we see of Danny Care. As I said, I don't think he played great on this tour, but I do still think he's the best scrum half of the country. Now, you know I love little Harry Randall, you know, running with his candle. You know, and he's got to be careful. He's only a little fella, and I don't want him to spill it on his candle, on his sandal. Fuck, I fucked that up. I'm rusty. But I still think Danny Care is the best all round. I thought Van Portfleet was great when he came on, to be fair. And love to see Rafi Quirk. We are blessed at scrum half. We got some fucking incredible talent at scrum half. Think about it. Danny Care, Van Portfleet, Randall, Quirk, Uren, Ben Youngs. You know, I mean, I don't want him there, but I mean, if he is there, he's still decent. He played well once or twice. Anyway, I hope that's not the last we see of Danny Care. Now, at halftime, I have to watch this as all US-based viewers have to watch rugby. I had to watch it on Flow Sports, which is the worst fucking sporting app, channel, whatever you want to call it, ever. It's an abomination. It's fucking terrible. It takes them like... sometimes takes 10 hours after a match to show the replay. And would you believe this? They put commercials on, adverts, during the game. They shrink the rugby down and they have a little, it's muted, but there's an advert going on. And the advert is bigger than the rugby when it happens. It happens about 5 times in a match. It's completely unacceptable. You have to pay for this. It's not free. And they're making me fucking... let me tell you something about me that you probably don't know. I live in an ad-free world. I don't watch commercials. Whatever the platform I'm using, I pay to make sure I don't have ads. So Netflix doesn't have ads anyway. No ads there. Hulu. I have Hulu. I pay for Hulu Premium. No ads. YouTube Premium. No ads. YouTube Music. No ads. Premium. Everything's premium. I'm a premium Eddie, and I'm outraged that I'm paying money for Flow Sports to fucking shove ads in my face. Anyway, during the Flow Sports coverage, they also use the Australian commentary, the Australian pundits, the Australian halftime coverage, all that shit. And they had Sonny Bill Williams there. Why do they have Sonny Bill Williams doing analysis? I don't know if you've ever listened to him, but he can barely string a sentence together. He, like, looks confident, and he sort of struts around with a swagger, but he is not particularly articulate. and there's not a lot of sense coming out of him. I hate to be mean, but it was pretty weird. And he's been doing it a long time, I believe. Anyway, back to the notes. 54 minutes. Yes, Marcus, speed. That was his intercept try. I was very happy there. I was getting annoyed in the last 15 minutes, I can see, because I wrote down, England just want to kick the ball away, which is a thing we often do. Like, we'll be in the lead, but the opposition, all they need to do is get a hold of the ball and score, and then we're fucked, and we just keep box kicking it to them. And by the way, when Jack Willis got driven over for that try but was held up, once again, it highlighted just how fucking stupid the goal line dropout for ball held up over the try line is. It's insane. It makes no sense. You're kicking ass. You almost scored. You're just held up. The other team is desperately trying to stop you scoring. And now they just get a get out of jail free card. Why? Why? Who does that benefit? Nobody. It's not even good for attacking rugby, which we're supposed to care about. It's less entertaining to fucking... It should be a fucking scrum. Attacking scrum. Anyway, that's everything, I believe. I don't want to talk anymore. I'll be back next week. What will I talk about? Is there anything going on in the world rugby? There'll be something. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll be talking shit on Twitter, and I'll get in an argument about something, and then I'll be able to talk about it. But thanks for listening again. Sorry I've been gone so long, and sorry if this sound quality isn't great. Once again, I'm having some issues with Anchor, which is the new platform I'm using, and whatever. I'll see you later. Bye.